Fox Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning, day after runoff day. 251-343-0106. You need to be a touch media show host. All you do is text us and we'll respond to whatever it is that might be on your mind. We're wide open to first hour, so if you want to get in, give us your thoughts on what happened last night in these elections. I'll just kind of go over the totals once again and give you my thoughts on them individually. But we'll also talk about, some of the other side stories. And there's some other things going on in the world, too. I see Trump on TV with the Indian prime minister. So, but we'll get into that. But coming up, Sam Roberts at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. His polls got it right, but the margins probably were a little more than what he had. But we'll talk about that, the trends heading into the runoff yesterday. Also, Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 will join us at the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour because it's Wednesday. And then we'll talk to Will Hampson, our usual Tuesday guest. We had to clear the deck here on Tuesday because it was primary runoff day and we had all the candidates on. But we'll hear from Will. And there was elections in Georgia last night, some other places around the country. And I think everything went about as expected. There may have been an anomaly here and there. But Will, aside from being from Huntsville, but he also really excels at what's going on in Georgia. And we could talk a little bit about that as well. Text line, you need to get in, like I said, 251-343-0106. And I told y'all this, and we saw it coming. Some of the polling, it had Jared Hudson up late in the race. I think won as much as 7 points. And just that was not reality. That was an alternate reality in the methodology. Either the methodology is designed in a way to wish cast, and I think that's a lot of it, or it's done in a way that is just completely erroneous, which that's probably some of it too. But if you're just now tuning in, you weren't paying attention last night, Barry Moore is now the Republican nominee for United States Senate. He defeated Jared Hudson by about 11 points. It was kind of a blowout, our part of the state, 2-1 in Mobile County for Barry Moore, and about the same in Baldwin County. Everything south of, I'd say, Autauga County went for Congressman Moore. And I'm not even joking. If you look at the map, it was a 50-50 tie in Fayette County. But the counties right around the city of Birmingham went for Jared Hudson. So it'd been Marshall, Coleman, Blount, Etowah, St. Clair, Shelby, Chilton County, Bibb County, and Tuscaloosa County, and Walker County, and then obviously Jefferson County were the ones that Jared Hudson won. He was a Birmingham phenomenon. He just didn't get traction statewide. And it may be this, and I've always complained about this. These polls are too Birmingham-centric. The samples they generate, they use, are way too weighted for the Birmingham market. And for the first time, you had a real true Birmingham candidate. You had a guy from Birmingham, from that area. It has won the adoration of a lot of Birmingham area Republicans. And that's what happens. And it's hard to find that likely Republican voter in Wilcox County or wherever. More remarkably, you look at North Alabama, where they didn't really have a dog in the fight. Kind of neutral. Barry Moore from Enterprise, Jared Hudson from Birmingham. And it went for Barry Moore. And particularly the Shoals, really strong for Barry Moore. But some of these polls, it just totally blew it. The Alabama poll, our friend Mike Lowry, he's got some work to do here. The other race that we were all watching, and this was supposed to be close as well, and it was not at all. John Wall defeating Wes Allen, even with the raccoon ad. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. A little different here. A 14-point win for John Wall. John Wall got the most votes yesterday of any Republican. He got 175,724 to Barry Moore's, let's see, 173,418. And then Catherine Robertson with 168,424. But he got more votes than Barry Moore. Sort of like Will Ainsworth a few years ago. He was the top, but now this is a Republican runoff, not quite as big of a sample. But John Wall really, really did well in county. There's sort of a, I don't know how to describe it. If you look at the map here, just sort of a sliver of the state. So Wes Allen, he's got Tuscaloosa roots. He did well in his home county, his former home county, Tuscaloosa County. It's neighbor to the north there, Fayette County. Down like the, it's like the Highway 82 corridor, if you're familiar with Alabama, between Tuscaloosa and Montgomery. And then obviously won his home county, Pike County. That is his, where he was probate judge in Troy. But the Trump-endorsed candidates, they continue to excel. John Wall went in Mobile County by a 2-to-1 margin. Well, not quite a 2-to-1 margin. 63-37. And Baldwin County by a 2-to-1 margin. 66-34. And then the other big race, as far as races go, Catherine Robertson defeating Jay Mitchell by about 11. We kind of saw this coming, that this is the polling from Allah Akbar, your butt back to the Middle East on, was kind of showing us this. This one has no real rhyme or reason, just pockets of the state went for Jay Mitchell, but mostly went for Catherine Robertson. So there's no consistency. If you look at these three marquee races, there's no lineage there. There's no like, okay, these three candidates had this in common, at least in a geographical sense, other than the winner did well in a big blowout, but where the opponent did well, it's mixed. It just makes Alabama a very difficult state to understand. Some of it may be the old Steve Flowers, friends and neighbors politics. I think there's some truth to that. And then some of it's just like a local district attorney or sheriff or somebody like that backing you and having that kind of sway. So, Catherine Robertson winning Mobile County 66-34. And Baldwin County, 61-39. And, you know, the thing about the two counties, the two major counties in this listening area, they are a good barometer for the rest of the state. At least, maybe not by margin, but by sense of who the candidate, this seems to be like doing the right things, blocking and tackling, kind of prevails the sentiment of, or, you know, shows the sentiment of the rest of Alabama. Holt Jones defeating Joe Freeman by 4 points. Down to South Baldwin County. It was close. But I think what really made the difference, just the money coming in late for Frances Hulk Jones. And she staves off an opponent. They didn't leave it to chance. Some others, the Corey Hill, Christina McInnes was close. 6 points, 53-47. It's for a Christina McInnes not to have the alpha endorsements is probably what won it for her or lost it for her. Corey Hill being the alpha candidate. She certainly spit big, and she was out and about. And then finally, as far as statewide goes, Jim Ziegler, my former employee at 1819 News, returns to the Public Service Commission. Yes, he was once upon a time on the Public Service Commission. I believe in the late 70s, early 80s. But he is back. The former state auditor. And that one was a lot closer than I thought it would be. 2 points, 51-49. Chris Beaker, the incumbent. Still hard to beat an incumbent. But with all the turmoil regarding the Public Service Commission, I would have thought at least 5 points. Just a dissatisfaction of what's going on. But guess what? It's still held. So the polling in the state, as I said, is abysmal. Very bad. You could kind of sense what was going to happen based on the May 19th primary. Nothing really changed. Those who outperformed in the May 19th primary outperformed in the runoff yesterday. Outperformed the polls. And this is a consistent thing. This isn't like, oh, wow, this is an anomaly. This happened. This happened now twice within the span of a month. And we're doing the same thing we did from the get-go. Even the pro Barry Moore polls, like Club for Growth and his own internals, had him. He outperformed those polls. And these are the internals that they released to the public, not the ones that we get quote unquote leaked to us. Not the ones they have held behind the scenes. The ones that show the rosiest picture possible for a candidate. Moore outperformed those. A double-digit win in a U.S. Senate race. Now, he was better positioned, well-funded, had the endorsement of a lot of the D.C. establishment. But I'm going to tell you this, sort of some behind the scenes. When these polls started coming out showing Jared Hudson ahead, the White House political team got real nervous about that. They really thought that Congressman Moore was in trouble. And we're going to have another Roy Moore. And that turned out not to be the case. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hill racers. People get out of our way wherever we go.
Come and do you live like I do every night from the heart of your radio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old songs. Here's open everybody out in radio land. Find the love just as true as mine. Good night.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Ultra Runner asked this. In the structural engineering world, we use fudge factors based on empirical data to help estimate complex forces. Do pollsters do the same? Do they slap a 1.2 factor on a candidate that consistently underpolls? Well, no, but they do this, and this is where they, I think this is where they get it wrong. They look at, and this is a good way to do it in most places. They look at turnout models, and they say, okay, well, Shelby County had this much turnout in 2024 and 2022. We think kind of based on the mood that we'll get this much turnout. Well, in a state like Alabama, I mean, you have pockets of the state. They're going to go with a certain candidate. And if you overpoll those areas, saying that you think that their turnout's going to be higher than say, in Baldwin County, based on historical data, then what's going to happen is you're going to get a sample that's completely not steeped in reality. And there's no perfect way to do it, but the margin of error in the scientific polls, you'll see 3 to 4%. It was more like 20%. That they don't, they're coming up with, it's pseudoscience. It's a hard state to poll. And there's a lot of lazy polling or cheap polling, text, online surveys. And we don't have landlines like we used to. But you got to have an understanding of what's going on around the state, I think, to get to the right sample. And what do I mean by that? And then some of it's this. Some of it is there another race down ballot in this part of the state that there's not in this part of the state? That's going to drive turnout up. Is there an issue? Is there a solar farm issue? Is there something like that that's going to get more voters out in this part of the state that wouldn't get it in another part of the state? Did we look at this? How about this? You had a lot of Democrat voters in the primary. They're no longer going to be eligible to vote in the runoff. Were you getting some likely people who thought they were likely Republican primary voters, but they were ineligible because they went and voted on the Democrat ticket? There's, a bunch of different things that maybe they got wrong. And they're not finding the likely Republican voter. I mean, polling is important. But we've got to do something. We can't have candidates who are, we're believing that this race is close and the media is treated like a serious thing. And then you look at the results on election day and you're like, none of this was right. And this is two times in a row now. So I've always said, especially presidential elections, you want to look at it like this, that you want to look at the trends. And maybe not the bottom lines. But the trend was this. The trend was telling us that Barry Moore was I mean, at least in the polls, was the gap was shrinking. Now, I guess that's true. It's to some degree. Well, it was like a 15-point win for Barry Moore. He got to 40%, maybe. I need to go back and look at this. And Jared Hudson narrowed the margin. See, in the primary, it was 39.2 to 25.6, so about a 14-point win. And in the runoff, it was 11 points. So Hudson made up 3 points despite Marshall haven't gotten 24%. Glory, glory. So he made some ground up there. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Glory, glory. I hear back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. Sam Roberts coming up in about a half hour, followed by Joey Clark, our Wednesday regular, and Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs also on the program. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Let's keep rolling through some of these texts. My name Texter. The winners in the majority of races were backed by big money lobbyists from Montgomery. I don't think that's true in the AG race. I think Mitchell was kind of Montgomery's pick. Lieutenant Governor, I don't think that's the case at all. Yeah, I'm not. There was a lot of national money backing the other candidates. So Washington, D.C. money kind of trumped Montgomery money, at least statewide. Jeff, Jake, and Christy had the same kind of pandering type of marketing. Christina. Well, yeah, you're right. But I think that was... I still think that Christina McGinnis ads weren't that bad. Scroverino wonders, Christina McGinnis's goofy commercials hurt. It's hard to beat the Alpha Endorse candidate in an ag commission race. I mean, it happens. She may have gotten, there was kind of this undercurrent that she has some kind of marijuana association, cannabis. I don't know, but it's also this, and this is what's historically true. Just being a candidate from the south end of the state when everything else would seemingly be equal, harder to win. Corey Hill's from Marshall County, not exactly a big city, but, you know, like I said, he had that Alpha endorsement. Chad, I had Barry 56, missed by 0.2. Mike, what's the difference in the raw vote numbers from May primary and yesterday's runoff on the Republican side? Well, let's see. That's a good question. So in the primary, Barry Moore got 188,825 votes. And in the runoff, got 173,418 votes. So he lost about 15,000 votes. Jared Hudson got 123,533 in the primary, and he gained votes, 137,340. Just didn't gain enough. But Barry lost a little bit in a lower turnout event. I was talking to Dale Jackson about this earlier today, and he is, I mean, his sort of shallow analysis was like, the internet doesn't matter. Facebook doesn't matter. Jared Hudson did really well on the internet, but that stuff doesn't matter. But it is mattering more and more every time we have an election. Maybe it didn't matter as much 20 years ago. It really was sort of, yeah, you're having a digital campaign, but you're not really getting that many voters out of it. The thing that Jared Hudson probably changed about Alabama politics is what he showed, like doing these and truly viral videos, not just checking a box, standing in front of a fast food restaurant with your camera phone talking about Alabama values or whatever, and not some gimmick like going to the gun range or whatever, but kind of looking at seeing what's viral, talking about Graham Plattner or something and getting traction off of that. Because no, your digital strategy is not enough alone to win you an election, but it is becoming more and more important. And that's how he gets in the runoff. That's how he defeats, a two-term statewide incumbent to get into the runoff in Steve Marshall. Only got it by 5,000 votes. That's about a point in the runoff. I mean, in the primary to get into the runoff. But that's becoming more and more important. And I think that's a trend that's going to keep going and keep going. And eventually, your digital strategy will play more of a role. We're kind of in the in-between phase. It's still all about winning. It's still right now hitting up Republican clubs and pancake breakfast and going and getting FaceTime with voters. You know, who was really, really good at this, and I sing his praises all the time as a politician, was Tommy Tuberville. You'd see him come into a restaurant. I kid you not, Hartselle, Alabama, 2020, late 2020. And there's an event down the street. I guess he's coming in to get lunch, but he's like walking in. And people are a little starstruck. He's like talking to him, and it's not in an intrusive way. It's not an awkward, hey, I'm Tommy Tuberville. I really want you to vote for me. He'll walk out and he'll strike up a conversation about someone's T-shirt or what they're eating or something like that. And that makes that relatability more of a factor. And there's something to that right now. People like that tangible that they can reach out and, you know, touch or talk to or sense in real life, not just something far away on a computer screen or a phone screen. But I think we're getting more and more into that territory where that stuff's going to matter more and more as we go. We may be 5 to 10 years away. But that's why Jared Hudson got to where he was, to be playing yesterday in the game. And I think Jared's got a future ahead of him. I mean, I've told him this. He doesn't need to take his ball and go home. You win as big as he did in that Birmingham market, he can win something else. Gary Palmer's not going to be in Congress forever. He would be a shoe-in, I think, to win that seat. And then you could go from there. But it's probably a big stretch for a lot of you. For a guy that's never held elective office to make him a United States Senator. It's not so much, hey, we need outsiders. You know what it is? A lot of these candidates use this, well, I'm not an outsider, or I'm not an insider, I'm an outsider, and I've never held office. That works for Trump. But people like people who have paid their dues, that have served in a lower-level capacity, that have done something on their resume. And not to say that being a Navy SEAL and running Covenant Rescue Group isn't something on the resume, but something in Washington, D.C., something that is applicable to your job, that you can't just say, I'm an outsider, I'm an outsider, and I'm an outsider. You could be an outsider but be within the system. You could be in the world but not of the world. And being in the world and knowing how to navigate all the pitfalls and all the stumbles and everything like that, to a lot of people, a lot of voters in particular, is important. Continuing on here, John, I didn't understand the comment you made, almost had another Roy Moore situation. I'm not being a smartass when I ask for clarification. There's something I know about his opponent I don't know. Another Roy Moore situation, I forget what that was in reference to, but not, I don't mean there was any weird allegations or anything like that. Jeff, what was the White House's beef with Jared? They didn't really have a beef. Barry was their guy. Barry Moore, in August of 2015, out of nowhere, one of Trump's first political appearances ever, before he was a known commodity. He was always a known commodity. Before he was a known political commodity. Before he had really had the big spike in the polls. Barry Moore endorsed Trump that day. one of the first elected officials to, in the country to do so. It's a big deal. Jeff Sessions got on stage, didn't endorse. I think Jim Ziegler was there, maybe. They gave Barry Moore some speaking time. And then that's when he got up there and he endorsed Donald Trump. And it was a long shot bet at the time. People weren't taking Trump seriously. I talked to, you see these guys at the University of Virginia Center for Responsive Politics. You see these guys at Decision Desk. And I remember this so vividly. Like, well, talk to us a little bit about Trump. I was putting a story together for Lanyap. Back when I wrote stories and not just columns for them, kind of about this whole Trump phenomenon. Also, Kellyanne Conway, before she was part of that team. And we were talking about it, and some of these guys, not Kellyanne Conway, but the others were like the D.C. learned, smart set, were telling me that they didn't even think that Donald Trump was going to qualify in every state to run for president. He doesn't know what you need to do. To them, they just weren't buying it. It felt like a publicity stunt. Come on. He's not going to be president. We see this, the celebrity president. That is silly. That's never going to happen. And this is like just like a day or two before we imagine that Trump rally at Live People Stadium. And you had people who are, you know, the so-called experts get a lot of it right, telling me, telling other media outlets that we don't even think that Donald Trump is going to last until the end here. Not only did he last, but he got elected twice. And Barry Moore at that time, when people were still, I don't know about this, this is kind of silly, whatever, got up on the stage and endorsed Donald Trump for president. And that's what really got him in the mix to be endorsed by the president. Continuing, Marshall, good morning, Jeff. I believe that Hudson's attacks on Congress and Moore's military service backfired and drove undecided Steve Marshall's voters to vote for Moore. Maybe. The thing was, like, those guys... The guys who ran that pack knew that Jared Hudson was down. And put yourself in that situation. What do you do? If you put yourself in that situation and you're sitting there like, okay, we got to meet at 12 or we got to have a Zoom call at 12. We got to talk about this. He's got to make up 15 points. How are we going to do that? We only got a month. I don't know, man. He's the Trump endorsed candidate. And that was it. I mean, they had to like go aggressive on that. And there was a chance it was going to backfire, but what else did you have? He needed to run up the score in Birmingham, and I think he did that. Where he needed to try to flip the script was in North Alabama, Jared Hudson, and there was not, that did not happen. I think down south was baked in for Barry Moore. I think he wasted time down here. He wasted time going to Enterprise and trying to eat into Barry's support in the Wiregrass. That just wasn't going to happen. And we've seen that before. Ask Jerry Carl how that worked out. Where I think you had legitimate swing voters, people with a potential open mind, was Tennessee Valley North. And nothing changed, really. It was the same outcome as a month earlier. Let's see here. Squirrelverine. I hope something can be done about Spanish Fork getting a post office. That's the kind of thing that shouldn't even require a new local office holder. I don't know. I mean, it's got to take an act of Congress, because right now, who uses mail? who uses the post office. A lot of people do. But the post office has pumped the brakes on new construction. They're just, it's not a sort of thing that's, it's not a technology where there's a lot of upside. It's sort of like building a printing press. And that's the problem. Because you just have this desire to downsize government. And there's a lot of that. So they're having to like figure that out. But I think nothing short of an act of Congress is what it's going to take to get a post office in Spanish Ward. I'm convinced of that. It's going to take a federal law to make it happen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Cowboy's hat.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. Unnamed texture, even though I'm a Trump supporter, I think President Trump is desperate for a deal with Iran. He's willing to turn his back on the nation of Israel just so he can appear to have made the big deal. My God, Iran is badder than they are big. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the military of the U.S. was not able to defeat Iran, so now President Trump is trying to sacrifice Israel. So on paper, it looks like a win, but I beg to differ with him, you, or anyone else. At least Obama sent them a jumbo jet full of billions in full view of the entire world. President Trump is secretly going to do the same thing covertly. I mean, we don't know that. How do you know that? That's just, I mean, did you read that online? I think it's silly. I think those are Democrat talking points just because they don't like Trump. Iran is bad, but Iran is not big. I mean, it's big geographically, but it's not. They took out the Iranian military. They decimated it. They took out half the like top 10 in the regime. The U.S. military did all of this. They suffered some consequences. They suffered far more consequences than we suffered. If you're just looking at it and you're just tallying up losses, they suffered. We had to pay more at the gas pump. But they suffered regimes, the significant harm to the regime. Maybe in the end, people just rally around the Iranian regime now because of it. The question is about Israel. Were they the best actors in this situation? There's a real riff. It may be a very difficult riff for Trump to overcome with Netanyahu over this. But the Israelis, people, you know, at some point, we got to look out for us, not Israel. We want to help Israel. But if you think that Iran is even now better positioned more than ever to get to Israel, you're just wrong. DEI texture, the Rubes did it for a guy who wasn't even a good football coach. He is a pretty good football coach. Especially relative to the history of Auburn University. Mike, I'm guessing that nearly $100,000 in AIPAC contributions Barry got probably didn't make much of a difference, and I'm sure more will be American Alabama first, right? Also, that's a dumb statement that Hudson smear attacks lost the votes and gave more votes. You just gave numbers that Hudson got more in the runoff and more lost votes. Oh, well, but it's not necessarily based on the veteran attacks. You don't know why more lost votes and Jared Hudson gained votes. You don't know that it was that or something else.
Promise me.
It could have been a bunch of different things. Jason, good morning, Jeff. You think Beaker was surprised he lost, or did he see something come in? Do you think Zay can make a real difference in that role? As far as the role, Public Service Commission in flux, I think Beaker kept it closer than a lot of us thought he would. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.